Welcome back, everyone. We're diving deep today into creating a garden that's not just beautiful, but also a haven for local wildlife.
Absolutely. It's about so much more than just pretty flowers. It's about creating a whole ecosystem.
And thankfully, we have an expert resource to help us.
Yes, Michael Van Doren and his fantastic website, tuinierfermincendier.be.
Wow, that's a mouthful. What does that even mean?
Well, it translates to gardening for humans and animals, which pretty much sums up Michael's whole philosophy.
I like that. So how is his approach different from, like, regular gardening?
Well, he focuses on creating what he calls garden biotopes. They're like mini ecosystems that mimic natural environments.
So instead of just planting whatever looks pretty, I'm creating these little pockets of, like, local nature.
Exactly. And his website has a step-by-step guide to help you choose the right plants for your area.
Okay, that sounds amazing, but I have to admit, I don't have a botany degree.
Oh, you don't need one. Trust me, Michael makes it easy to understand.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah.
So where do we even begin?
Before we dive into plant selection, let's clarify a few key terms. Let's start with herbaceous versus woody plants.
Herbaceous versus woody. All right, lay it on me.
Think of it this way. Herbaceous plants have soft, flexible stems like wildflowers and ferns. Woody plants have harder stems like shrubs and trees.
Okay, so it's about the structure of the plant.
Exactly. And understanding this will help you visualize your garden as you choose plants.
So I could create different layers and textures with a mix of both, right?
Exactly. Now let's talk about plant lifespans. You have annuals, biennials, and perennials.
Okay, annuals are the ones that live for just a year, biennials 2 years, and perennials come back year after year, right?
You got it. Understanding this is key for planning and maintenance.
So if I'm looking for something low maintenance, perennials might be the way to go.
That's a great strategy. But annuals and biennials can still add pops of color and attract specific pollinators.
Okay, so a good mix of all three. Now, what about those other terms I always get mixed up? Native, naturalized, and exotic.
It's an important distinction for a nature-inclusive garden. Native plants are the foundation of your local ecosystem.
Because they've evolved in this region for a long time, right?
Exactly. Naturalized plants are non-natives that have adapted to your area. Sometimes they can become invasive, though.
Oh, right, like that Japanese knotweed I keep hearing about.
Yeah.
It just takes over everything.
Exactly. So while exotic plants can be beautiful, it's crucial to research their potential invasiveness.
That makes sense. So sticking with natives is generally the best approach, right?
Definitely. But then the question becomes, how do you choose the right native plants for your specific garden?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. There are so many options.
Well, that's where Michael Van Doren and his informative website, tuinierfermincendier.be come in.
Okay, that website again. Tell me more about how it can help.
He recommends using this great online resource called ecoflora.be. It lets you filter plant options based on your garden's characteristics.
So it's like a matchmaker for plants and gardens.
Exactly. And while there are other resources out there, Ecoflora is especially helpful for creating a biodiverse garden.
Okay, Ecoflora it is. Now, how do I use this website? What are all these filters about?
The filters help you narrow down your plant choices to those that will thrive in your specific location. First up, soil type.
Ah, soil, the foundation of every good garden. But how do I know what type of soil I have? Is it sandy, loamy, clay?
You can often tell just by feeling it. Sandy soil is gritty, loamy is crumbly, and clay is sticky. There are also some easy tests you can do at home.
All right, so I figured out my soil type. What's next?
Soil moisture. You have options for dry, normal, or moist conditions.
So I need to think about how well my soil drains, right? Yeah. Like if my garden is on a slope and dries out quickly, I'd choose dry.
Exactly. And if it tends to stay damp, then moist might be the better choice. Matching plants to your soil moisture is crucial for their health.
Got it. Soil type and moisture, check and check. What's the next filter on our EcoFlorid adventure?
Now let's consider the lifespan of the plants you want. Annuals, biennials, or perennials.
Right. This filter helps me decide how much effort I want to put into replanting each year.
Exactly. And remember, it also has ecological implications. Perennials benefit a wider range of organisms over time because of their deeper root systems.
So it's not just about convenience. It's about creating a more sustainable garden. Okay, what's next?
This is where it gets really exciting for a nature-inclusive garden. The origin filter. This is where you choose between native, naturalized, and exotic.
And we're sticking with natives, right? To maximize biodiversity and support our local ecosystem.
Absolutely. Native plants are the real stars here. They have co-evolved with local insects and provide the specific food and habitat they need.
Wow, I'm really seeing how this all ties together. Each filter helps me create a garden that truly supports local life. What's the final filter on Ecoflora?
The last one we'll focus on is application. For attracting those pollinators and beneficial insects, I highly recommend using the bees and butterflies filter.
Oh, yes. I want my garden buzzing with activity. So this filter helps me choose plants that are especially attractive to them.
Exactly. It highlights plants rich in nectar and pollen, essential food for our buzzing friends.
And attracting bees and butterflies means attracting other wildlife too, right? Like birds and those beneficial insects that keep pests in check. It's all connected.
You've got it. It's like a chain reaction of biodiversity, all starting with those amazing pollinators.
This is fantastic. So I've gone through all the filters on Ecoflora and have this amazing list of native plants, perfectly suited for my garden. What now? Do I just rush to the garden center and start loading up my cart?
Not so fast. There are still some potential pitfalls to avoid before you start shopping, and Michael has some great advice on how to navigate those tricky situations.
Okay, pitfalls. Tell me more. I'm all ears.
One common mistake is not using the Latin names for plants when you're actually at the garden center.
Oh, right. Because common names can be so confusing. Like, different regions might use the same name for completely different plants.
Exactly. But Latin names, well, those are universal. It's like the scientific language of plants. That way you know you're getting the exact species you want.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
So I have my list with all the fancy Latin names. What's next?
Michael suggests pre-ordering your plants from the garden center. Might seem like an extra step, but trust me, it can save you a lot of headaches.
Pre-ordering. Why is that so important?
Well, first of all, it guarantees that the specific native plants you carefully chose using Ecoflora will actually be there when you're ready to plant.
Oh, I see. Because not every garden center might prioritize native plants.
Exactly. Pre-ordering helps ensure you get the right choices for your nature-inclusive garden, and it helps you avoid another potential pitfall.
Which is?
Impulse buys. You go in there with the best intentions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I can see it happening already. All those beautiful exotic plants just calling my name.
And suddenly, your carefully curated native plant list goes out the window. So yeah, stick to your pre-ordered list. It's like having a shopping list at the grocery store. It helps you stay focused. So true. Resist those tempting impulse buys. Okay, so I've pre-ordered my native plants, resisted those exotic beauties at the garden center. Any tips for actual planting day?
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to planting herbaceous plants, remember, those are the ones with the flexible stems. Michael has this interesting tip. Plant 2 to 3 times the recommended number per square meter.
Wait, overplant? Won't that make them too crowded?
It seems counterintuitive, I know, but overplanting herbaceous plants actually has a couple of major benefits. First, it helps them outcompete weeds.
Oh, less weeding. I'm listening.
And second, denser planting creates a more lush and protective habitat for wildlife, so it's more attractive to all those creatures we're trying to invite into our garden.
So it's about creating this thriving community of plants rather than just isolated individuals.
Exactly. And here's another important tip. Always look for the bio label when you're buying plants.
The BO label. Okay, remind me what that means again. It guarantees that they haven't been treated with pesticides. And that's crucial because pesticides can be super harmful to all those pollinators and beneficial insects that we're trying to attract.
Right, of course. Creating a safe and healthy haven for them. Bio label? Check. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. From understanding basic plant terminology, to navigating those filters on Ecoflora, to avoiding pitfalls at the garden center, and even getting those native plants in the ground. So, what's next on our journey toward creating this nature-inclusive garden?
Now that we've mastered the art of plant selection and planting, let's dive a little deeper into those garden biotopes we mentioned earlier. Remember, those are like mini ecosystems within your garden.
Yes, garden biotopes. This is where it gets really exciting. It's like creating little pockets of local nature right in my own backyard.
Exactly. A biotope is basically a small-scale replica of a natural habitat. Think of a meadow, a woodland edge, or even a pond. And by replicating these environments in our gardens, we're basically rolling out the welcome mat for all sorts of local wildlife. We're giving them a place to find food, shelter, and raise their young.
Okay, I'm getting the concept, but now I need some specifics. What are some examples of garden biotopes that I could actually create?
Let's start with a simple one. A flower-rich lawn, it's a great way to sort of dip your toes into the world of biotopes.
Okay, so I have a lawn, but it's mostly just grass. How do I make it more, you know, flower-rich.
It's all about shifting your mindset away from that traditional, perfectly manicured lawn. Instead of mowing and fertilizing constantly, you allow a mix of wildflowers and low-growing native herbs to flourish amongst the grass. It's like having a miniature meadow right in your backyard.
A mini meadow. I love that idea. It sounds so much more lively than just plain grass. But wouldn't that be a ton of work to maintain?
Actually, a flower-rich lawn is surprisingly low maintenance. You generally mow it less often, allowing the wildflowers to bloom and set seed. And it's way more drought-resistant than a traditional lawn, which means you don't have to water it as much.
Less work and less water. That's a win-win in my book.
Okay.
Sold. So what kind of creatures could I expect to see in my mini meadow?
Well, you're going to see a noticeable increase in pollinators like bees and butterflies. They're drawn to the nectar and pollen from all those beautiful wildflowers.
Okay, that's awesome.
And those pollinators will in turn attract other wildlife, like birds and those beneficial insects that prey on pests. So you're creating this interconnected web of life right in your own lawn.
That's incredible. Okay, flower-rich lawn, check. What other biotopes can we explore?
If you really want to take that meadow concept to the next level, you could create a full-fledged flower meadow. This would be a larger area dedicated entirely to native wildflowers and grasses.
A flower meadow. Oh, I can just picture it now.
Yeah.
Filled with all those colorful blooms and buzzing with life. It sounds idyllic, but also like a lot of work.
You know, flower meadows are actually relatively low maintenance once they're established.
Yeah.
Typically mow them just once or twice a year. You just let the plants complete their life cycles and set seed. And they attract a huge diversity of creatures.
Okay, so less work than a traditional lawn and way more life. What kind of wildlife would I see in a flower meadow?
Well, imagine butterflies like the small tortoise shell with its gorgeous orange and black patterns, or the peacock butterfly with its striking eye spots, just flitting amongst the flowers.
Butterflies, that would be magical.
And it's not just butterflies. You might see the green shield bug with its vibrant emerald green body, or the common blue damselfly, a delicate little beauty that hunts for other insects. It's a whole world of fascinating creatures.
It's amazing to think that just by planting native wildflowers, I could be providing a habitat for all these creatures.
Yeah.
Okay, what other biotopes are on the menu?
Let's not forget about the classic flower border. This is like a long, narrow bed filled with a mix of native flowering plants and shrubs. They add structure and color to your garden, and they provide valuable habitat for all sorts of wildlife.
I've definitely seen flower borders, but they always look, I don't know, kind of formal and manicured. How do I create one that's more nature inclusive?
It all comes down to choosing the right plants. Instead of those exotic high-maintenance varieties, focus on native plants that will provide food and shelter for local wildlife.
So instead of like a perfectly trimmed row of the same shrubs, I'm creating a dynamic mix of native plants with different heights and textures and even different blooming times.
Exactly. Think of it as like a living tapestry, just bursting with color and attracting a constant stream of pollinators.
Okay, flower borders are definitely on my list. What else? What other biotopes should we consider?
Hedges are often overlooked, but they actually play a crucial role in providing shelter and nesting sites for birds and insects.
Hedges. Okay, so what kind of hedge am I looking for?
Instead of planting just one type of shrub, create what's called a mixed hedge, using a variety of native shrubs.
So it's not just a boring green wall. It's a dynamic hedge that actually provides food and shelter throughout the year.
Exactly. And if you choose a mix of deciduous and evergreen shrubs, you can even provide year-round cover. So it's a safe haven for wildlife no matter what the season.
Okay, hedges, check. What else can we add to our nature-inclusive garden?
Let's talk about trees. They're the giants of the garden world, and they offer so many benefits for both us and wildlife.
I love trees. The shade, the clean air. They make a space feel so peaceful. How do they fit into a nature-inclusive garden?
Trees are essential for creating that vertical structure in your garden, and that's super important for many species of birds and insects. They also provide a canopy that creates a cooler, more humid environment underneath, which benefits all sorts of plants and creatures.
So it's not just about planting a tree, it's about understanding its role in the overall ecosystem of the garden. What are some good native trees I could consider?
Well, that depends on your specific region, but some great choices for attracting wildlife include oak trees, which support tons of insect species, and willow trees.
Oh yeah, willows. They're so graceful.
They attract pollinators and they provide nesting material for birds. So you get multiple benefits from just one tree.
It's amazing how much life one tree can support.
And don't forget about the undergrowth beneath the trees. You can create a little woodland edge biotope by planting native wildflowers, ferns, and other shade-tolerant plants that will thrive in that dappled light.
Okay, trees and undergrowth, got it. Any other biotopes we should talk about?
We can't forget about water features. Adding even a small water feature to your garden can really boost biodiversity.
Water features. Now we're talking. I've always wanted a pond, but they seem like a lot of work.
Not necessarily. There are all sorts of water features you can create, from simple rain gardens and swales to more elaborate ponds and streams. It depends on your space, your budget, and how much time you're willing to spend on maintenance.
Okay, so break down some of those options for me. What exactly is a rain garden?
A rain garden is basically a shallow depression that's designed to collect and absorb rainwater runoff. You plant them with native plants that can handle both wet and dry conditions.
Oh, so they're not just pretty, they're functional too.
Exactly. They help manage stormwater runoff and reduce flooding. Now, swales are similar to rain gardens, but they're usually longer and narrower. They kind of follow the natural contours of the land.
Okay, so it's about working with the natural flow of water on my property.
Got it. What about ponds? Those seem like they'd require more effort.
Ponds can be as simple or complex as you like. You can create a natural-looking pond using a flexible liner, or you can go with a preformed pond if you want something more structured.
All right, and what about the plants?
You'll want to plant it with native aquatic plants, of course, and you want to make sure that it provides a suitable habitat for local wildlife.
I bet ponds attract a whole different set of creatures compared to those other biotopes we talked about. Oh, absolutely. Ponds are like magnets for biodiversity. You might find dragonflies with their iridescent wings just zipping back and forth.
Oh, I love dragonflies.
You might also spot frogs and toads hanging out amongst the reeds or newts gliding through the water.
This is incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see my garden as this whole ecosystem. It's not just a space for me. It's a haven for all kinds of amazing creatures. But what if I get stuck? What if I have questions or need some expert guidance?
Well, that's where Michael Van Doren comes in again. Remember, he's the expert behind that informative website, tuiniervormincendier.bee.
Oh, right. He's passionate about these nature-inclusive gardens.
Exactly. And he offers personalized advice and guidance for anyone wanting to create one.
That's so great to know. So if I need help, like identifying a plant or choosing the right biotope or attracting a certain creature, I can reach out to him.
You got it. He's incredibly knowledgeable and so passionate about helping people create gardens that benefit both people and wildlife.
Fantastic. This is all so inspiring. I can't wait to get started.
And we're excited to see what you create. But before we wrap up, I think it's important to take a step back and consider the ecological impact of our gardening choices. You know, thinking about the bigger picture.
Okay, so it's not just about creating a beautiful and biodiverse garden. It's about understanding how our choices affect the wider ecosystem.
Precisely. And that's something we'll be exploring in part 3 of this deep dive.
Can't wait. This deep dive just keeps getting more and more fascinating. Welcome back to our deep dive into nature-inclusive gardening. I'm so excited to keep exploring this topic with you. It's really got me thinking differently about my own backyard.
It's wonderful to see your enthusiasm. I think it's great that we're shifting our perspectives on what a garden can be.
Yeah. You know, when I first heard the term nature-inclusive, I have to admit, I had some misconceptions.
Oh, I bet. What kind of misconceptions came to mind?
Well, I thought it meant just letting my yard go wild. You know, like giving up control and letting nature take over completely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a common misconception. But nature-inclusive gardens can be just as beautiful and well-designed as traditional gardens.
So it's not about neglecting your space. It's about embracing a more natural aesthetic while still having, like, structure and intention.
You got it. It's about working with nature, not against it. And I think that's a really beautiful approach to gardening. So what other misconceptions did you have?
Well, I also thought it would be a lot more work. Like, I imagine myself constantly battling weeds and pests.
I hear that a lot. People think that a nature-inclusive garden will just become this overgrown mess.
Exactly. But you're saying that's not necessarily true.
Not at all. While every garden needs some level of care, nature-inclusive gardens can actually be lower maintenance in the long run.
Really? How is that possible?
Well, think about it. When you choose the right plants for your site and create diverse plant communities, you're essentially mimicking nature's own systems. Those plants are adapted to the local conditions, so they're less susceptible to pests and diseases.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the garden becomes more self-sustaining over time.
Exactly. Plus, by encouraging beneficial insects and other wildlife, you're creating a natural system of pest control. Those ladybugs will happily munch on those aphids for you.
It's amazing how nature takes care of itself. But what about finding those native plants? You know, sometimes you go to those big box stores and it's all exotic species.
That's a valid concern. Native plants aren't always as readily available, but thankfully there are more and more resources popping up to help you find them.
Okay, good. So give me some tips. Where do I even begin?
Start by doing some online research. Websites like Ecoflora, which we talked about earlier, can be a great resource.
Right. Ecoflora. What else?
Connect with your local native plant societies or nurseries. They're a wealth of knowledge. They can often point you in the right direction and help you find locally sourced plants.
Okay, so it might take a little extra effort, but finding those native plants is definitely possible.
Absolutely, and it's so worth it. You're making a real difference for your local ecosystem.
This has been an incredible deep dive. I feel like I've learned so much. And you know what? I feel really inspired to take action in my own backyard. It's not just about creating a pretty space anymore. It's about creating a space that supports life.
I love that. And remember, every little step you take makes a difference. Every native plant you add, every pollinator you attract, every raindrop you capture, it all adds up.
Before we wrap up, I have one last question. What's one thing we can all do to inspire others to embrace this nature-inclusive approach?
That's a great question. I think the most powerful thing we can do is simply share our passion. Talk to your friends, family, and neighbors about the beauty and the benefits of nature-inclusive gardens. Show them what you've created. Invite them to join the movement.
So we can be ambassadors for biodiversity. Lead by example.
Exactly. And, you know, celebrate those successes along the way. Every little victory, no matter how small, is something to be proud of.
This deep dive has really opened my eyes to a whole new way of gardening. And I think it's something that everyone can get excited about.
Absolutely. It's about creating a garden that brings you joy and supports the incredible web of life all around us.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back next time with another fascinating topic. Until then, happy gardening.